Okay, this is our final hour with Professor and Dr. Bernard Heiss, the author of The Purpose-Guided Universe. We're going to take your phone calls as well. And perhaps you will share your stories of consciousness, things that have happened in your life. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We'll take some final phone calls here. The theory tonight we talk about is the universe is a product of intelligence. And I believe that as well. What about the supernatural, Bernard, about like angels and things? Do you believe in their existence?
Well, there's always a possibility. I think that the, as I mentioned in my book, the difference between other universes that are postulated in string theory, other multidimensional universes, which may have other properties and may have other kinds of dimensions, other laws of nature, and probably other life forms. And who's to say what the difference is between that and the things that are talked about in the spiritual traditions of other realms that have other kinds of intelligences? To me, it seems like there's the same possibility within both points of view.
Do the other universes, the multiverses, have different gods, or do we all have just one?
Of course, you're asking very difficult questions here. Now, remember, I'm just a guy speculating on these ideas.
You're just the messenger.
I'm the messenger. Well, I suppose. In my opinion, and that's all this is, my opinion, no. I think there's one intelligence behind everything. But I think that one intelligence can manifest in many different sorts of ways, and other universes with other laws of nature would be a different way for that being to experience his potential.
Fascinating. Okay, next up we go to Tallahassee, Florida. Ernest is there on the wild card line. Good morning, Ernest.
Yeah, good morning, George and Doctor. And actually, you kind of just said some stuff about what I was going to ask about, because the caller earlier discussed evolution kind of backing up your theory about God. And I'm an atheist, and I'm just wondering, you know, if there is a God, why bother creating people? I mean, if he has souls with him or with it, why bother making physical beings, putting them on Earth, having them evolve for thousands of years or whatever from banging rocks together to building skyscrapers and rockets? I mean, that seems kind of pointless if he already had the soul together to begin with.
Well, I don't think he does. I think you've made it sound as if God creates us as separate things to watch somehow, to look upon his playthings almost. I don't think that's the case at all. I think what's happening is that God is experiencing himself through our lives, through the lives of other living creatures in the universe. And so it's not God manufacturing other beings to watch. It's God manufacturing a place for himself to have different kinds of experiences. So it's a very different perspective on the one that than the one that you presented, because it's not anything that is derogatory to mankind. Rather, we are God having these experiences. I don't think there are any separate souls that, well, I guess I don't know whether there are separate souls or not, but the important thing is for God to gain experience.
Do you think modern religion is throwing a monkey wrench at all of this?
I think religion always has. I think religion throughout history has thrown monkey wrenches. The problem with religion is that they don't agree with each other. They cause dissension and hatred between themselves, and that's certainly not what spirituality is all about. I mean, look at what has happened in Islam. You've got the Sunnis hating the Shiites and the Shiites hating the Sunnis. It's the same religion. It's crazy.
There's no doubt about that. We go next to Britt in Albuquerque, New Mexico, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Britt.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
You speak of heaven being boring, I guess, is what you said. I mean, or that it couldn't exist because it would be too boring, I guess. I have to disagree with you because it's, at least in my belief, it says that when we get there, all we'll be able to do is, being that we are so overwhelmed with God's power and God's love, that we will do nothing but sing his praises. And the reason why I believe this to be true, I mean, and well, also you speak of us getting to heaven as if we're going to have the same kind of consciousness as we do now. And if that's the truth, then I would agree with you. It would probably be boring. But I don't believe that we're going to be on the same level as we are here. Do you understand what I mean?
I understand that, and I agree with you that our own consciousness is going to evolve over the experiences that we have. But still, to me, the idea of being someplace that is infinitely long in extent, something that never ends, to me, that's terrifying. I mean, Woody Allen said something. He said, eternity is a very long time, especially toward the end.
But if we are in eternity, if we are overwhelmed with pleasure because of God's love, that to me sounds like an eternity that I would, you know, graciously invite.
Well, possibly, but think about something that really goes on not just for a year or 100 years or 1,000 years or a million years or a billion years, but forever. Now, I don't think anything can exist that is going to continue to be pleasurable. It's going to be something that becomes repetitive and eventually becomes unbearable in my opinion.
I don't see how God's love could be repetitive. I'd have to disagree with you, sir, but I respectfully disagree with you. You know.
All right, there you go. Next up, we go to Wayne in Litchfield, California. First-time caller. Go ahead, Wayne.
Okay. That one guy said that God would... I forget now. But anyway, we are made in God's image, correct?
Supposed to be.
Yes. So therefore, we are beings that are capable of God's power.
Yeah.
Following. Go ahead.
We're bad. We're maybe a bad copy, but we just have to get towards it. And what I think is we got to work towards being like him, so that we could take. The idea is not that we are beings that are God. Like, we have to evolve to the point where we can take over God's ideals. Or
let me see if I can help you out here a little bit. Sounds like he's trying to say, through this evolutionary process, as we said earlier, are we feeding back things to the God figure?
Yeah, I think we are. I think that's the point of it. I mean, think of the things that people do that they find enjoyable. About a week ago, I'm from Indianapolis. I grew up in Indianapolis, and they have a big race every year called the Indy 500.
Sure do.
Really big deal. Biggest spectacle in racing, they call it. Anyway, 225,000 people go there to watch the race, and it's very thrilling. Now, do you think God would enjoy being there? Well, yeah. I mean, it's an experience that we find pretty thrilling. I think God does enjoy being there, and he enjoys being there through all the fans that are there watching the race. And so there are lots of things you can imagine that are happening here in this physical realm that you think God would enjoy. And he does enjoy them. He enjoys them through us, because if it weren't for us, they wouldn't be happening.
String theory. Do you look at that at all?
A little bit. But string theory, I've got to say, is so arcane and esoteric. Unless you've spent years and years, you can't begin to understand the mathematics behind it. And I'm not sure that's the proper place for physics to go, because it's going down a path that's untestable and has some very wild ideas in it, ideas that can almost equally be interpreted from a spiritual perspective as from a physics one. It's a very odd pursuit, because there's no prospect of any validation anywhere in the near future, even in the distant future.
Alan from Boulder Creek, California writes, he simply wants to know of your thoughts of the living universe theory.
I would have to know what that is.
A universe that's alive.
I guess the universe is alive through the life forms that exist in it. I don't see galaxies and stars being alive, but I certainly see lots of planets around other stars, and on the surfaces of those planets having conditions that would give rise to lots of different life forms.
But they could be alive, the way stars are born, the way planets are formed. Life in a different way.
It's difficult for me to conceive of, because a star is not a very structured thing. It contains gases. It has layers. Yes, there are layers, but there aren't fixed patterns and fixed structures like there are in the human body, where you can have cells and neurons and all the things you need, the great complexity that you need to have sensation and sentient experience. That's missing from a star.
Text in from Phil in Tennessee. Wants to know if your conclusions are based on your education or personal experience.
Well, both. I mean, keep in mind, what I'm saying here are my personal beliefs. I'm not claiming that God has spoken to me and told me to tell you these things. I'm not claiming prophecy. I'm just giving you my best take on things after many years and decades of thinking about this. From the time I was a child, through working as a career in astrophysics for many decades, my best view on things, because I think the world needs a better view of God. I think one of the biggest problems, and this goes back, George, to what one of the things you asked me earlier about, why do scientists reject God? One of the reasons is that we have a very bad perspective of God, a very bad picture of God. We view God as many of us do, as a vengeful deity who's out to get us if we don't toe the line, who's very critical of us, who's ready to send us to hell if we disobey him. I remember when I was a kid, maybe 12 years old, over at a friend's house eating a hot dog one day. Now, I realized all of a sudden to my horror, oh, my God, it's a Friday. I'm eating a hot dog on a Friday.
I remember those days.
Yeah. Now, I thought I was going to go to hell for eating that hot dog. So what do I do? Do I offend my friend and say, I can't take another bite because I'm going to hell if I eat this? Or do I go, well, all right, you know, I'll risk it. I'll go to confession next week.
It's probably pretty healthy, though. Not to eat mad on Friday. So I wish I had known now what I should have known then, huh?
But it's crazy.
Or vice versa.
It's crazy to think there's a God who would care whether I eat a hot dog on Friday. And so it's the notion of God that's a big problem in the minds of scientists, and it's a valid complaint.
Let's go to Detroit, Michigan. It's George's turn. Hey, George.
Hey, George. George from your hometown, right?
You got it.
Okay. Well, the bottom line still becomes people talk about Bible and about God and all these kind of nebulous things. Well, I wanted to start with a joke real quick, if I could, on reincarnation. Say you start out with 10 people. Each one has a soul, 10 souls, 5 men, 5 women. The 5 men get the 5 women pregnant. 2 of the men die. The 5 babies are born. The 2 souls of those 2 men come back, but 3 of the babies are faking it, unless somebody's creating more souls. They don't have a soul. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's late at night.
Well, anyways, Jesus Christ has given the answer to all these things. And as far as evolution goes, now I believe in microevolution, variation within species, and look at the beauty of that rather than to think of Darwinian evolution by matter and chance and time and mutation and that kind of thing, but an order that God created, just the variety of cats and dogs that we have bred came from scientists basically have come to that conclusion, too. 2 dogs that were more like wolves, but now you have everything from chihuahuas to Great Danes and all these variations. How can it be boring? And how can God be boring when he is infinite? You're not going to be repetitive in heaven. There's going to be animals there. There's going to be plants. There's going to be eating. There's going to be singing. There's going to just be singing and praising God. He's going to give us things to do, work, and that's the beauty of God and the beauty of heaven, that heaven, every day in heaven, will be greater than the day before because you'll learn something more about this infinite God and the infinite universe that he created, and will be forever becoming infinite, and that does not end, and that cannot be boring. But, I mean, Jesus Christ has given the answer to all these. That's why he came. There is a heaven to be gained and a hell to be avoided. So unless you want to, and most people don't want to, he left 3 possibilities. He's liar, Lord, or lunatic. So you either think he's a liar or a lunatic, that he purposely lied or he didn't know what he was talking about, or he was who he said he was. And he's the greatest, the most loved, and the most hated figure in all of humanity. I mean.
All right. Well, that's a lot there, George.
Okay, I just wish he'd address some of it, you know.
Okay,
I mean,
let's give him his chance here. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, first of all, culturally, I am a Christian. I was raised as that. In fact, I still sing in an Episcopal choir on holidays. It's kind of fun to go and sing the old songs. But in terms of heaven and hell, I do strongly think that there is no such thing as a heaven or hell as we picture them, because if we are offspring of God, not just offspring, but if we are God experiencing physical reality, how could God punish himself by putting himself in hell? I mean, it just makes no sense to me that there is a hell of eternal punishment, especially when you think of things that were once upon a time said to be the causes for being sent to a hell, like the hot dog I mentioned. I mean, this is just insane to think that someone could be sent to hell for eating a hot dog.
Or what about the confessions? If you as a Catholic didn't confess, you'd go to hell, but your buddy who was a Protestant didn't have to, and he's okay. Remember that?
Lots of inconsistencies, weren't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in terms of Jesus Christ, I think he was a very great figure. Culturally, as I said, I'm a Christian myself, although I think that my views are rather independent and different from most conventional Christianity.
What did you find to be one of the most compelling aspects of your work here with the Purpose Guided Universe?
Compelling aspects of the work?
Of everything you put together, for you, what was the most compelling?
Well, I guess the whole thing has come together. I guess I realized after all these years of thinking it over, that there is a logical and conceptual basis for believing in a spiritual reality that does not have to in any way contradict with science. In fact, many of the great scientists have written about things that are beyond the materialist version of science. The Max Planck wrote that there are realities existing apart from our sense perceptions. Well, there it is. Max Planck, one of the founders of the quantum theory, said that about other realms. So the whole thing coming together as a way to plausibly believe in something that takes fully into account the scientific findings that we know to be true, and yet at the same time goes beyond the quarrels and the bickering of religions. It's that's what's excited me about having written these two books.
Let's go to Atoka, Oklahoma, east of the Rockies. Carl.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for your program tonight. It's one of the better ones I've ever heard.
Well, thank you.
It's kind of eye-opening, that's for sure.
Yes. Doctor, have you ever considered the perfect imbalance of Mother Nature, and that causes the field frequency flows and interactances that cause everything?
No, I don't quite know what you mean.
Well, Mother Nature, you've heard the people say Mother Nature is balanced.
Mm-hmm.
That's a patent falsehood, because if everything was balanced, there would be no energy flows at all.
Well, that's what I said earlier in the show about physical existence or experience.
Yeah.
You can't have experience without having opposites. It's just impossible. If you had nothing but white light everywhere, there'd be nothing to see. If you had nothing but the same temperature everywhere, there'd be nothing to sense in terms of heat and cold.
If you don't have the experience, then you can't make a decision of which is right or wrong.
That's also true.
Yeah, exactly. Now, here in Oklahoma, I'm a Choctaw, Cherokee, and Irish extent. And I'm a shaman, an Indian shaman.
Mm-hmm.
I do communicate with stones, with birds, with all the life forms, the trees, even the wind through the trees. And that may sound a very strange thing to the average person, but if you have this in your history and in your genetic makeup, i.e. your field frequency, it's nothing more than the interactions from the field frequencies of everything. That's what it amounts to, and I call it the music of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Have you considered some of those things?
Well, I know a little bit about shamanic traditions, and I believe that shamans say that they're tuning into some other reality. I believe that that's real. I don't just dismiss that as, well, that's just imagination or cultural conditioning. So I'm with you on that, but I really don't know much about shamanism per se, because I'm not a shaman, and I'm this intellectual scientist who's thought these things through from an intellectual point of view with very little experiential information.
Why is time important in terms of Big Bang, 13.7 billion years, planet Earth, 4.6 billion? How come we're not talking about 25 billion years? Why 13.7, for example?
Well, I don't think there's any particular significance to 13.7. It just happens to be the age that we measure. It could have been 10 billion or 20, I suppose.
And could they be off by billions of years?
No, not at this point. There was a crisis about this about 20 years ago when it looked like we were measuring the ages of certain stars, and they appeared to be older than the universe, which, of course, made no sense. But that problem has been resolved now, and the star age has been moved up. And the 13.7 is, I think, pretty good to within a factor of, I would say, better than 10%.
Fascinating work. The amount of scientists who believe in what you believe, what percent would you give that?
Yeah. Well, you know, even though it's thought that most scientists are atheists, and probably the majority are, somewhere I read that about 40% of scientists do believe in a higher force, a higher intelligence, mm-hmm, of some kind, or even a personal God. So it's probably not as small a percentage as you think, but it's certainly not the majority.
Okay, well, when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM, we'll take final phone calls with you. Fast night this Sunday night, and then I'll tell you what's in store for the rest of the week when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. So don't touch your dial. We'll keep those of you on hold from Augusta, Maine, Clearwater, and Pasadena. We'll be back. On our next Coast to Coast program, Mitch Batras joins us along with Bob Woodward. No, not that Bob Woodward. He's of the science community. We're going to be talking about incredible climate change as we lead up to 2012. On our Tuesday program, Stanton Friedman joins us along with Kathleen Martin as we talk about when science was wrong. On Wednesday, the doctor who said that autism was directly related from some vaccines and did not get his license in England. They kicked him out of England. He can't practice there. Dr. Andrew Wakefield joins us on Thursday, and on Wednesday rather. Then on Thursday, David Black joins us. He's a producer and writer. He's written such shows as CSI and Law and Order. He'll be talking with us about his life and his job. And also Dr. Lewis Turry will be joining us sometime next week as well. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Tell me a little bit about some of your work as an astrophysicist. Bernie, how'd you get interested in that?
Well, interestingly, when I was a kid, when I was only 6 years old, I knew that I wanted to do two things in life: become a priest and become an astronomer. So I pursued both of these things together for a number of years until finally I went to a seminary, spent a year there, and then decided, no, I really didn't want to follow the celibate lifestyle and become a Catholic priest, and had some issues with the church. And that's when I went into astrophysics, when I went to Indiana University, got an undergraduate degree there, and on to the University of Wisconsin in Madison, where I got my PhD. And the work I spent most of my time doing was on the high energy emissions from the sun and stars, flares and other ejections from the sun and from stars.
Okay, let's go to final phone calls now. We'll go to Pasadena, Texas, first-time caller. Dale, go ahead, Dale.
Yeah, how you doing tonight? This is Dale from Pasadena. Mm-hmm. And I have a question. Have you ever heard of the Terra Papers? Spelled T-E-R-R-A. They'll tell you our whole history, where we come from, who created us, and so on. You'll learn everything from then up to date. Extraterrestrials have been involved from the beginning. And there is a conspiracy. The Rockefellers and the Rothschilds are controlled. They are the factions that control the world. Well, 8,000 years ago, they were called the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, which translates to Rockefellers and the Rothschilds.
Well, okay. I don't think that's within Bernard's bailiwick there, but...
Right, it's a bit out of my...
There you have it.
Yeah, a bit out of my bailiwick.
Let's go to Clearwater, Florida. Alfred on the wild card line. Go ahead, Alfred.
Oh, hi, George, and hello to your guest. And I'm not as smart as the people that were there just before me, but I want to know one thing. It's, we're talking about the spirit being cut up and then going to another baby. But when somebody's on the operating table and he dies and he comes back, he keeps saying that he saw all his relatives. So, I mean, who are you, George? Who am I? Who's your guest? I mean, what are we? Are we still there, even though the spirit is gone from us?
You're talking about near-death experiences, and those are actually quite impressive. People who have come to a state of effectively clinical death or just about death experience much of the same sorts of things, a tunnel of light, meeting dead relatives, and so on. I mean, I think this is a good indication that there's other things continue beyond death, and that our consciousness is more than just something that comes from the neurochemistry of the brain. So I take near-death experiences as being pretty good validation that there's more to reality than simply the physical world.
What would you like to achieve with your work here, the Purpose-Guided Universe?
Well, I'm looking to sell books, but not because I'm looking to make a ton of money. That's not the reason I wrote the books. I think the world needs a new view of God, a new view of spirituality that's compatible with science. And that's what I'm trying to do, to provide something that's compatible with science and gives people a sense of purpose and belief and some understanding of their own spirituality and the nature of God. So it's a public service, really, that I did. I mean, that I hope I did. Let's put it that way. I hope I did. Who am I to say?
Asa in Augusta, Maine, you're up. Hi, Asa.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
I've got a couple of questions for Bernie, because I'm just fascinated by what he has to say. It's amazing to see how he's able to articulate things that I have known and understood for a long time. But one question that I have is, I have come up with a theory just from observing that there is no knowledge lost or gained in the whole of the one universe or all the universes that there are, or that there might be. However, I want to ask you this. You say that you basically go from the intellect, and I believe that because that's the way I am too. But the true scientist goes from the intellectual theory to actually experimenting with the experience, and that's where it's at. Okay, and I understand everything that you're saying because you articulated very well as a scientist, but the experience is the most essential thing, and I want to know how can someone like me, myself or others, go from the intellect, because the intellect is the spiritual part of it of the individual, to the actual experience. And then the other thing I'd like you to comment on is on the chaos theory. Thank you.
I'm not sure I can comment on the chaos theory, so I'll put that aside for the moment because that's not my area of expertise. But what you said about nothing being lost, I think there's a great truth to that. I think nothing that happens is lost. Somehow it all goes into the consciousness of this huge database that is the creator of all, the intelligence behind it all. So I would agree that probably there's nothing that's lost, and I think that's consistent with the idea of our lives being something that we you know, we carry forward with us the experience of our lives, and that enriches God and enriches ourselves too as we evolve.
Yes.
What was the other question?
You, as a scientist, you say that you go, you're very intellectual.
The experience, right? Now that's that's the place where I wish I could help you, but I can't because I'm not an experiential person at all, and I delve into these things purely in terms of other people's writings and what I've other people's writings. And thought them through and tried to come up with rational interpretations, things that don't contradict anything that I know about science as a scientist. So I wish I could help on the experiential front, but that's not, again, that's also not my bailiwick.
I understand that, but you are aware that if you accept the notion that there's no knowledge lost or gained in this universe or in any other universe, then, I appreciate what you're doing with the intellectual part because that's marvelous on your end. But there are others that can contribute more on the other end, on the experience side. Do you
acknowledge that? I agree with that. I agree with that. I think there could be contributions. In fact, I'm thinking of teaming up with an experiential doctor out here to present these, possibly present workshops on these books with an experiential component, but one provided by my companion, my business partner, perhaps, not by me.
Earlier on, what do you mean in your work, the perennial philosophy?
The perennial philosophy is the summation of the wisdom traditions, or a summation of wisdom from all the world's religious traditions. And it was called that a couple of centuries ago, but the source for most of the perennial philosophy sayings I have in my new book is from Aldous Huxley's book called The Perennial Philosophy. This means the philosophy throughout the ages that is the common basis of the world's religions.
All right, let's go now to Travis in California. You're up with us. Go ahead, Travis.
How you doing, boys? Great show tonight. First time caller, and I'm religious. I'm a religious coast to coast listener.
Good.
I just think that we are we live in a duality, and that's the reason why there's evil. Without evil, we wouldn't know what good is. And you touched on that earlier, and it's absolutely correct. Without, you know, there's a movie called Legend, and the devil in that movie said, how would you know what, you know, good is without evil? How would you know what light is without darkness? And so on. You touched on something like that earlier.
That's right, I did, because any kind of experience requires opposites. You cannot have experience without opposites. It's impossible. And unfortunately, that carries over, I think, into the good and evil situation.
I think we're just in our infancy still, and we're still in a duality, and we haven't evolved to something greater yet, which we probably will eventually in our, you know, existence. And I just got to say, kudos to you, Doc. You have fielded some of the hardest questions I've ever heard on Coast to Coast without flinching. And George, you are doing some of your best work in your life, and I think it's awesome. Thank you very much, boys.
Well, thank you very much. Maybe I did flinch a little bit, but it doesn't show on the radio.
No. You're taking it right on. You're doing well. You're doing well indeed.
Thank you.
I still question our role of consciousness. In terms of, I believe in its power and its incredible abilities, but how does it tie into, as you say, the Darwinian evolution?
Well, in terms of consciousness, there's something I'm going to do, which is a bit unusual. I've got to sort of tout a book that's not mine. I suggest that people read a book called Quantum Enigma, Physics Encounters Consciousness. Quantum Enigma, Physics Encounters Consciousness, by a couple of physics professors named Bruce Rosenblum and Fred Kuttner. They provided quite a bit of the information in my book on the role of consciousness in quantum physics, because it's undeniable that quantum physics and consciousness go together. And they make the point very clearly in a very rational sort of way. In fact, they've been criticized by some of their colleagues for saying some things about consciousness and quantum reality that could be misinterpreted. But it's an excellent book, and I suggest that people look at that.
Okay, let's go now to Tennant Falls, New Jersey. Hey, Bill, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead.
Thanks very much, guys.
Sure.
I agree with almost everything that you've said tonight, except for one thing. When you first started out, you said that God needed to have humans in order to experience what it was to be human. As soon as you say something like that, you go against a prime premise of mine, which is that the thing which most people call God is absolute perfection, not just perfection, but absolute perfection. And that is the thing that allows the human being, Homo sapiens, to have hope, because regardless of what kind of a situation the individual gets into, unless he has hope, then there's no such thing as continuance. He will suicide. So therefore, absolute perfection is one of the things that human beings simply have to do. It's one of the mandates, and I think that God has given us like three mandates. One is to preach absolute perfection so that we have hope. The next is to never miss an opportunity to be nice. And the third is to always use our best natural and acquired talents to promote right human relations so that everybody is given a fair shake. My dad used to say that heaven is the state in which the id of an individual, the soul or spirit of the individual, is perfectly content forever. What is he? He is content. To what extent? Perfectly. And for how long? Forever in the fullness of time. Now, effectively, what that means is that when the individual, if he has done those three things, as I mentioned before, then he is judged. And at his judgment, if he is found to have done those things to the best of his ability, not that he has to accomplish anything great, but he has to make his best effort. If he makes his best effort, then God will accept him, and he will meld into the absolute perfection, and therefore he won't need to be reincarnated. If he's reincarnated, it's like Groundhog Day, you know? you go back and you keep doing it until you get it right.
Well, I think I mainly agree with you, but I don't think we can possibly be absolute perfection as human beings, because I think that...
No, not us. What I'm saying to you is that if we just take those three mandates, you don't need all 10 commandments or anything else. They're all boiled down into those three things. Preach absolute perfection exists. Second thing, never miss an opportunity to be nice. The third, always use your natural and acquired talents to promote right human relations. If you do those three things, just make your best effort to do those three things. If you do that, at that particular point, God, at the time that you pass, will judge you to have made your best effort and therefore will accept you into his being. That is to say, absolute perfection. And you will be, as my dad used to say, perfectly content forever.
Well, I agree with you that these are excellent principles. The one thing I would dispute somewhat is that God judges you. I don't think God judges. I think that we as beings carry with us our own judgment based upon the actions that we've done. It's not something that requires God's intervention as some kind of a heavenly judge. That's where I would disagree with you.
Okay, we go to Toronto now. It's Tina's turn. Hi, Tina. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone.
Morning.
I'm calling with a question, almost maybe a comment, in regards to a statement you made about infinite being almost scary and too long, therefore maybe perhaps boring. The question or comment is, I'm not even sure if this will come out properly. You know when you have a thought, but you're not sure if you can articulate it in words? If everybody says that heaven is such an amazing feeling that it cannot even be described into words, is it possible that perhaps infinity may actually be an instant, meaning it happens instantly and it's a feeling or an experience or event that lasts infinity?
I think you've hit upon something here. There's an important distinction I think that needs to be made between something that goes on forever, which to me seems horrifying and perhaps even logically impossible, and something that is outside of time. Now, the problem with outside of time is that I don't know how to imagine that. I can't picture something being outside of time. But I think this great consciousness that created everything is outside of time. And I don't, it's a paradox to understand how something can be outside of time and can be creative and dynamic and still not have time to be flowing for the actions to take place in. So that there's a paradox here. But I do think it's important to differentiate between the eternity aspect, the forever and ever and ever, which, as I said, scares me, versus the outside of time and space altogether, which I cannot elaborate because I have no way to think about that. But I think that's how it is. I just can't possibly conceive of what it's like.
What can we do with this knowledge, for example? How can we make this a better world for our own existence right now?
Well, if we really believe that whatever we do will eventually come back upon us, I mean, think of what change that would be with respect to human nature. You know, if there's no getting away from it, no dodging the bullet, if we really believe that, I think it would tremendously change human behavior.
All right, next up, Matt in Oklahoma City, east of the Rockies. Hi, Matt. Go ahead.
Hey, George. It's good to be on the show again. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd just like to say I think you're serving a noble cause, and I would kind of like to defend Dr. Heish. Is that how you say it?
Heish.
Heish, okay. I do sympathize with you. I feel bad that all these religious people are calling in to give you a hard time, but I think you're taking it rather well. And I just wanted to kind of defend you on that and say I sympathize with you, and that I think reasoning and uncertainty would be a better thing to rely on instead of faith alone.
Thank you.
And I think your beliefs resonate well with mine. My question was, if you think that robots, I mean, obviously they rely on Boolean logic and all that and everything. If they can be programmed to understand things, and once they get up to the point to where they can understand more about us than what we know about ourselves right now, they may not have a consciousness, but how do you draw the line between something that can rely on data and something that can go into whatever we would call a spiritual realm? And I'll take my answer off the phone. Thanks.
Well, you see, I view consciousness as being something that's that comes in from the outside, that there's something that flows into the universe from a great intelligence. And so if you had a sufficiently complex machine, it wouldn't surprise me if somehow consciousness would see this as a vehicle for its own expression and enter into it. So I don't think we can create consciousness, but we can create a host for consciousness, and our bodies are hosts for consciousness. And I think in the same sort of way or analogous way, a sufficiently complex machine capable of, quote, thinking could become a vehicle that would attract consciousness to use that as a means of existing in a physical environment.
Do you believe this God has an emotion at all?
Love. I mean, the thing that comes through from the mystical experiences of people everywhere is that it all comes down to love. That love is actually not just a sugary word, it's actually a force, an energy at that level. At the level of consciousness, love is actually a force and energy of some sort, a driving thing that makes creation possible.
Worldwide, nationwide, universally, all over the place. It doesn't stop, does it?
No.
Name of the book, The Purpose Guided Universe, available at Amazon.com and I'm sure major bookstores.
Yep.
Website, thegodtheory.com.
Yep.
What would you like people to walk away with this interview with?
Well, that there's a...
Besides the book.
Besides the book. That there is a purpose to life, and that purpose can be understood in terms of a rational spirituality that's in no way inconsistent with science.
I look forward to our next chat, Bernie. Thank you.
So do I.
All right, you take care of yourself.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Bernard Heisch, the author of The Purpose-Guided Universe, Believing in Einstein, Darwin, and God. Don't forget our next program. We're going to talk about 2012 and these incredible Earth changes. For Jason Bowers, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.